Hey, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I really got out a lot out of today, and I think of this as marketing and promotion. I'm actually walking away with development and growth.
Yeah, I thought this whole experience, the mentoring conversation before we started recording and this conversation after, was extremely helpful.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. If you're in transition with your business and how you are leading, they go together, please call me right away at 1-612-804-8920. What I know for sure is when you are in a pivotal situation in the middle of overcoming a whole host of challenges, you need clarity. The way business owners get clarity is by gathering information and resources while continuing to keep their cash flowing in their business. So use WeMentor to reinvent or evolve yourself while you redesign your business. We help you take charge of your self-leadership process so you can overcome internal challenges assertively. Self-leadership is about taking charge of the transition you and your business are in. Please do not allow yourself to be the obstacle in becoming your next best self-leader. You can also reach me by emailing nancy@wementor.com. I'm ready for a co-mentoring adventure with you. And by the way, so is today's sponsor, Sally Doyle. Schedule a profit analysis with Sally for only $99. Take charge of your money life. Sally Doyle is the founder of Absolute Business Solutions. She's known as a trustworthy bookkeeper who loves crunching the numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs. You can sleep soundly knowing every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You're freed up to do the work you're good at and keep leading. Sally Doyle, profit strategist, bookkeeper, and innovative thinker at Absolute Business Solutions. You can reach her at 1-651-208-8151. So thanks everybody for tuning in today. Today's guest is Tom Hubler of Hubler Family Business. We are focusing in on family business with a thought leader of our time. In 1980, when Tom began his career as a family business consultant, he was one of few professionals addressing family-owned business needs in the United States. Since then, he's played a major role in shaping the family business consultant field, from helping colleges establish family business institutes to working directly as family business consultants for hundreds of clients. Today, Tom continues his long-standing dedication to helping families of wealth and family-owned businesses succeed. He helps families develop a shared vision for the family and for the business, identify individual talents, tackle any unspoken issues, and create individual and organizational strategies to ensure a personally and financially rewarding business. In addition, Tom assists families of wealth with the creation of a wealth preparation plan. They call it succession planning. That ensures family values continue to emphasize a family culture of gratitude, philanthropy, and purposeful living. Some of the achievements behind this successful man is he's a founding member and fellow of the Family Firm Institute in Boston, a professional organization serving the needs of family-owned businesses. He's a professional in residence at the University of St. Thomas, St. Paul, Minnesota for 10 years. Tom is a former adjunct instructor there. He co-taught a class in family business management. He's also the founder of the Minnesota Family Business Awards. Those were started in 2007. He writes a monthly column in the Twin Cities Business Magazine. He's published over 50 articles and scholarly papers, including a monthly column in Twin Cities Business Monthly Magazine. He's been twice a guest on NBC's Today Show. He's been quoted frequently in the New York Times Magazine, Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal. He speaks on cutting-edge family business issues around the world. Tom lives in St. Paul, Minnesota with his wife, Joy. Together, they enjoy life with two adult children and their spouses and seven grandchildren. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you feeling?
I'm good.
Yeah? Yep. Ready to rock and roll?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, as a family therapist, I need to ask you some feeling words.
Okay.
So, what are your deep feelings today?
Excitement about doing this is one of the things that's going on right now.
Okay, good. All right. And you published The Soul of Family Business in 2018. It's a practical guide to family business success and a loving family. I really love the book. I think there's so much content in there, and the way that you break down the content, I think that it's an important read for anyone in business, and in particular for family businesses, to sort out all the different parts of how you make a family work in business.
Right.
So tell us how to do that.
One step at a time.
Yeah, right. What made you decide to write a book at this stage?
Part of what the response to that question is, you know, having a plan. You have to have a plan. If you really want to do all these things, you have to have a plan. And it's in the book, when I was a junior in high school, I worked for a family-owned business grocery store in St. Paul. And Bill Nolan was the oldest of the six kids who owned this business. And their dad was in the back sorting bottles and so forth. He'd retired. And Bill was a very jocular guy, and he used to come down the aisle, and I was stamping three tins of peas one day with a mechanical stamper. And he came up and he said to me, "What's your plan?" I said, "I don't have a plan. I'm busy putting peas in the shelf." And I thought, what a dumb thing to say to you. So then he says to me again, "What's your plan?" I said, "I don't have a plan. I'm busy putting peas in the shelf."
Yeah.
And he said to me, "A plan that isn't working is better than no plan at all." And he walked off, and I thought, what a dumb thing to say. Well, I've used it my whole career. I used it when I was at St. Thomas, and I use it with all of my clients. And the idea here is you have to have a plan if you're going to be successful. And family businesses tend to avoid that. They're so busy doing what they love to do, which is their business, they forget about the importance of planning. And you need to have a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. You're also known with succession planning. I mean,
right.
Is that the bulk of your work right now?
So it's a combination of things around succession planning. And there are four plans you need to have to be a successful family business: an ownership plan, which includes governance, management and leadership, business, and then a family plan about how you're going to be a family without the undue influence of the business. And so the goal is to build the emotional equity of your family while you're simultaneously building the equity of the company. And what happens is most family businesses tend to emphasize the business and forget about the importance of the family. And the research on this is that when families are in harmony, it goes straight to the bottom line and they're more profitable. So it's important not only from a family perspective, but also from a financial perspective to work on and build the emotional equity of your family.
Yeah, because I noticed in your book, you said that most family business owners are not thinking about bringing their family into the business when they start.
No, they don't. I mean, they're entrepreneurs and they're busy doing their business. And that's what they're focusing on. And they don't think about the idea of having a family member come in. But their first advisor generally is their spouse. It's usually a man, but there are now more women doing this. But it's usually a man, and his first advisor is his wife.
Yeah.
Or the board of directors, that type of thing. And then gradually they'll bring the kids in and so forth. And one of the things I say is that one of the things that family businesses need is what I call a family participation plan, which is a set of ground rules about coming into the business and what you need to do and what's the leadership plan, what's the career plan, what's the compensation plan, what's the decision-making system, how all is that going to work? Well, what happens is they don't do that.
Right.
If you go to a Twins game early enough and you get there before the game starts every night, even though they play every day, the managers and the umpires get together at home plate to go over the ground rules. And the reason they do that is so there won't be a dispute in the middle of the game about what's going to be fair and what's going to be foul. And so what happens in family businesses, they start playing the game of family business without a set of ground rules. And of course, that's when the problems occur.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way you create a balance between these two systems, if you think about them as circles, a family circle and a business circle, if you work in a publicly traded company, they're separate. But in a family-owned business, they're overlapped. And the degree to which they're overlapped determines whether it's a successful family business or if it's a difficult family business or a family business that has difficulties. Because when they're overlapped too much, it creates problems.
Yeah.
And so I say to clients, in order to balance between these two systems and make some separation, you have to have structure and formality. And they say to me, Tom, we don't need all that structure and formality because we love each other. And I say to them, it's because you love each other that you need structure and formality.
Yes.
And so that's a lot of what I do, is to help them develop the necessary structure and formality to be a successful family business.
Well, and to me, also part of your success is the way in which you're able to communicate and get people who are very set mm-hmm. in a certain way of thinking
right.
to kind of unleash that a
right.
bit so that they can take a look at how they're doing things and separate themselves a bit more
yes.
from the
yes.
entity.
Yes.
So they're looking at it from a different perspective.
Right. Well, they're looking at it from each other's perspective rather than just their perspective, because that's one of the problems is that they only look at it from their own perspective.
Yeah.
Rather than there are multiple people in a family-owned business, and each of them has their perspective. And it's not unusual for the owner-entrepreneur to have only one perspective, and that's his perspective or her perspective, but it's mostly a dad.
Yeah.
And they only think about what they want rather than what the rest of the family wants.
Right, exactly. So a lot of communication needs to happen.
Yes.
And a lot of trying to understand
yes.
the other person's
yes.
perspective.
Yes, that's critically important, understanding. And in order to do that, you have to listen.
Yeah.
And that's the communication skill we use the most, but have the least amount of education in. So learning how to listen and take something in and allow it to touch you, and allow whatever the other person is saying, allowing it to touch you is a skill that most people need to develop. And in order to do succession planning, for instance, in a family-owned business, you have to be able to talk about two of the three most difficult things to talk about in our culture. You have to talk about money,
yeah.
which is very difficult to talk about for most families. And implicitly, you're talking about the death of the senior generation. And they don't want to talk about that, and neither do the kids.
Right, yeah. Well, you come about your knowledge from a wide berth of different disciplines and different opportunities
yes.
that have surfaced as you have built out mm-hmm. your family business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just take a step back and describe a little bit what it was like growing up in your family?
It was difficult. You know, I grew up, I was an inner city kid over in St. Paul. And we don't, you know, like the inner city is not very bad in St. Paul compared to other places in the country. But I was an inner city kid and we had, you know, as it says in the book, we had a modest income. We were poor basically. And both my parents worked and during the latter years, both of them were alcoholics. And so they had that sort of a thing to deal with. So things were difficult, but that's not to say they weren't terrific people. And they had this illness
illness changed this family system.
Right, right. And so that made things difficult. And
you at an early age then became the therapist.
Well, I said in the book, when I was a young professional, I was out giving a talk and someone said to me, how did you get into business? I said, well, there are two answers. There's the professional answer, which is I did well in psychology and that's how I got into it. And I said, but the real answer is I started as an unpaid volunteer in my own family at age 7. And so that's how I got into this is that way. So
sure. And what were some of the qualities that you remember about both of your parents raised you?
Yes, yes.
And how many other siblings did you have?
I have a sister,
okay.
2 years younger than I am. And so it was just the four of us. We had this very, very small little bitty apartment. And my dad was, he barbered in St. Paul from 1922 to 1942. And he barbered at the Hotel Claude Barbershop, which was downtown St. Paul. And it's where all the minor league baseball players, when they were in the minor leagues, stayed when they were coming into St. Paul to play baseball. And so like Babe Ruth and people like that would stay at this hotel. And so there were all these, and he kept his license after he stopped barbering. And he would take me down there and cut my hair. Mm-hmm. But there was all these pictures of athletes and boxers and all this sort of stuff.
In the barbershop.
In the barbershop,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, because he cut all their hair.
So if I was a good boy in the chair, he would reward me with putting green Jerez tonic in my hands, which was like an aftershave lotion. So this is one of the poems I wrote about that. It's called Special Moments with Dad. And he, by the way, he had white hair. His nickname was Cotton. So all those stories about white hair and being called Cotton, the special moments in the barber chair with green Jerez tonic, the Hotel Claude barbershop with all of his stories of past heroes, the follow-up breakfast at the bus, which I now know as Mickey's Diner, the block walk to Applebaum's to get the week's groceries, hearing about the years on the Rock Island Railroad and the four generations of our family that worked there, having you hold me in your arms and singing Beautiful Dreamer, feeling the pride of knowing I was your son.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
So.
Yeah. So you even are getting teary-eyed as you read it.
Oh, yeah. Here's another one I'll just do quickly.
Yeah.
He went to work for the railroad, and my great-grandfather, Obadiah, worked on the Rock on the Railroad. My grandfather, who I didn't know, his dad worked on the Rock Island Railroad. My dad worked there. And my dad got me, the first summer out of high school, my dad got me a job on the section on the Rock Island Railroad. So I was the fourth. But this is called Cotton and the Rock Island Railroad. My dad loved the Rock Island Railroad, his polka dot switchman's hat, his bull's wool long underwear, his overhauls, his pocket watch that he inherited from his brother, the straight edge razor and strap, his railroad timetable, his lantern and lunchbox, his Bull Durham cigarettes, his son.
Oh, he's his son.
So anyway. Yeah. Mm. So my mother, on the other hand, was a very, 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 when I was going through family therapy training, there were no academic programs in those days. You had to go to an institute. And so I went through this institute. And when I was graduating, we could bring anybody we wanted. So I brought my wife and my mom. And she came there, and my mother was always sort of complaining about me and all that stuff. And she said to the teacher, you know, he's got the guts of a road agent. And she was referring to me as the guts of a road agent. And Merle said to her, I wonder where he learned that. And she said, you know, I don't know. So that I was, at the time, a kid, a very audacious kid. But I got all of that from my mother. And my mother's motto was, and I was talking about this earlier today with another family, was you come out of your corner swinging. So this is my sweet mother. You come out of your corner swinging. You know, it's like, oh.
Wow.
So that a lot of that, that toughness that I have came out of my, my experiences with my mom.
Okay.
So.
Surviving.
Yeah.
So what entrepreneurial and leadership skills did you get from each parent, do you think?
I think that, the people skills, I think I got a lot of that from my dad.
Oh.
You know, his sensitivity and his warmth and his laid-back attitude. He was I don't think he was very ambitious. But again, he loved the Rock Island Railroad, and that was a big deal for him to be on the railroad.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that he, when I was in the barbershop, in those days, there was a shine guy, shining shoes.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so he would introduce me to the shine guy. And I thought I was meeting a celebrity when I would meet the shine guy. And then he went on the railroad. There were guys called carmen, and carmen were the lowest people on the totem pole for the railroad. They were always black or Mexican-American or something like that. And when he would introduce me to them, I thought I was meeting the president of the railroad. So a lot of my sensitivity and a lot of my altruism and a lot of my social justice sorts of things came from my father, I think. Although he never sat down to talk about that stuff, but he exemplified those sorts of things.
Right. Interesting with that. And you said your mom worked as well?
Yeah, my mom was really bright. And she was a stay-at-home mom during the initial years when we were small kids, but then she decided to go back to work. And they developed a thing called a licensed practical nurse. And normally you'd go to school, an LPN.
Yeah.
Normally you go to school to learn how to do that. Well, she just took the test and passed it without any formal education at all. She just passed it.
Okay.
And so she'd had some work as a scrub nurse in an operating room. But again, that was like she had a high school education. That was the extent of her education. So I think she, in today's world, she'd have been a star educationally and gone to school and all those sorts of things, and which wasn't done back then.
Yeah. So how did you come to terms with your alcohol was a way in which of compensating for feeling?
We had a fire that gutted our house in 1979. And my way of dealing with that was to say, well, I'm not going to let a little fire set me back.
So this was like when you were 40?
Yeah, I would have been getting close to 40. And so
I just read it in the book.
Anyway, so
so
this fire, we lost everything, and so I thought, well, I'll put it in low gear, just like I did in my family of origin, and not let a thing like that. Well, what happened was I was still a therapist in those days, and this colleague of mine said to me, "You know, Tom, you're acting kind of crazy. You ought to go see a therapist." So I went to see this therapist, and after about the second session, she said, "You know, you're an adult child of an alcoholic, and you need to go to Al-Anon." Al-Anon? What do you mean? I'm the aggrieved party here. I have to go to Al-Anon? You want me to go to Al-Anon? Well, I did, and it was very, very helpful, and that's one of the ways I began to realize how, even though I didn't misuse alcohol, the illness had affected me in ways about how I deal with myself and other people and so forth. And so then I eventually got into an adult children of alcoholics group with a bunch of professionals, their lawyers and doctors and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we were all had grown up in families where our parents had the illness of alcoholism. And so it was a very, very positive experience about learning how to manage that.
Yeah.
And so.
That's excellent. And how do you take care of yourself now?
I do, you know, I meditate once in a while, and I kept bees for 40 years, and that's another sort of meditation about doing bees. And it's more of a, like, to me, it's like a spiritual practice. And and being one with the bees, and, you know, you can go into a hive and they won't bother you generally, depending, and it's also a function of the weather. And if it's a high pressure day, they're more docile. But the idea is to be one with the bees and not bang around and upset them, and they don't bother you, basically. So,
sure.
So things like that have done. You know, I play tennis and garden. I'm a big gardener and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. So, and when did you meet Joy?
I met her. It would have been 19. I'm trying to think. 1970. It would have been 19. I'm trying to think. 1988. Is that right? Yeah.
How old were you?
I would have been in my 40s again.
Okay.
And
was that your first marriage?
No, I was married earlier. And and so I met my wife, my first wife, I met her at a party at the U of M. Rah, rah, sky, you ma.
Oh, you were just talking about that off air.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, you want to clue in the audience a little bit.
Well, the Sky Yuma is one of the rooms in the Coffin Memorial Union, and it goes back to the early 1900s when it was a rouser type thing that was going on, and I don't remember the details anymore, but it has to do with the history of the University of Minnesota and a chant to, you know, have the team be successful, that type of thing. Okay. So it goes, rah, 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 Sky Yuma. So if you go to a Gopher game like I did last Saturday with one of my grandsons, it's like rah 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 for Sky U Ma, rah 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 for the U of M.
Yay!
So
go Gophers!
Yeah, go Gophers! So
I see. So you met your first wife at the U.
Yeah, at the U. Mm-hmm. And we were married, and we had two babies that died at birth. And my wife went in to have a second baby and came out with no baby and hysterectomy. And we'd always planned to adopt a couple of kids. One of the jobs I had when I went to St. Cloud State for 5 quarters is I lived at the St. Cloud Children's Home when I was a cottage parent there. And and if you had evening duty, you did dinner and television or play or whatever you used to do after dinner.
Yeah.
And eventually you'd have to get them ready for bed. And there was a little dorm of 5 or 6 boys and a little 5 or 6 girls who were like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And you had to, you know, get them ready for bed and put their pajamas on and get them all cleaned up and so forth and put them to bed and tuck them in and kiss them goodnight. Didn't make any difference what color you were. You know, they just wanted to be kissed goodnight and told they were loved.
Yeah.
So had that experience. My sister is 2 years younger than I, so I never had any experience with younger kids. So after I finally graduated from the University of Minnesota, rah, rah, rah for Sky Yuma. I finally graduate. And my first job was at Catholic Charities in St. Paul. And the entry-level jobs in those days were doing adoptions. And so there was this big three-ring binder of hard-to-place kids. And when you'd open up, it was mixed-race kids, black kids, white kids with physical disabilities, and Native American kids. And so I made a decision to adopt a couple of black kids before I'd ever met Kathy. And so we adopted, we were in the process of doing the adoption when we found out she was pregnant with the second pregnancy. Then we lost the baby and we just went ahead. So both my adult children are Black. Kirsten is African-American and Norwegian-American. And John is Irish-American and Afro-American. So
okay.
So now I've got seven grandkids and they range from 22 to 6. And their colors are from medium brown to olive colored. So
okay.
So we have a kind of a blended family.
Yeah. Sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're involved in the family business now.
No. Well, they've, you know, they, John, what happened was, this is a long time ago, the office manager asked me if my daughter Kirsten was interested in being a receptionist and sharing it with another high school student. And it turns out she wasn't available. And so then I said, well, what about my son, John? And he was 15. And I said, well, and she said, he's a little young. And I said, well, would you interview him? She said, okay. So I went home and I said, John, there's this opportunity down at the company and here's what it pays. And he got all excited because it paid more than fast food. So then I said to him, now, John, I'd like to suggest you wear a shirt and tie for the interview. I said, well, you handle it however you want. Well, he got down there to the office and he was hired on a one-day probation. But the day that it was announced at a staff meeting in one of the conference rooms that he was going to be working there, I began to choke and
get
do all the things.
Choked up.
Choke and do all the things. I was saying things that I've seen my clients do and saying things like, I hope it doesn't embarrass me. I hope he doesn't work down here like he is at home. Right. I hope he works hard.
Yeah.
And on the home front, my daughter Kirsten, who was unavailable to take the job because she was going to the University of Minnesota. She was going to the University of Minnesota in a special program to get minority students into science careers and being paid to go there. And so we come home and she'd say, he took my job. I said, what do you mean he took your job? You weren't available. And of course, John would come home and say, well, he took me out to visit a client today. Then he took me out to lunch. And it's like, and she was the older of the two. And she was, I think she thought she was being eclipsed. And I thought, holy smokes, how did I get into this mess?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that, you know, my clients go through.
Right, right. That you weren't thinking initially when you started your practice.
Right.
Yeah.
And currently my wife, Joy, works with me. She used to work full-time and now she just works part-time and does some of the typing and backroom stuff that I need done.
So. Okay. And it sounds like you have a virtual assistant.
Oh, yeah, that's Chris.
Yeah.
She's up in Hayward, Wisconsin.
Okay. So and how is that working?
It works pretty well. You know, we do stuff over the telephone and email and so forth, and it works pretty well.
Okay. And what kind of stuff does the virtual assistant do for you?
She does all of my scheduling.
Oh.
And she does some of the light typing that I need done. Handles some of the details that I don't like that I'm not good at.
Yeah, that is a very popular option.
Yes,
for a lot of business owners now.
Yes, it works really well, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Very cool. There's so much in the book that I was sorting out. Mm-hmm. Well, what would the listeners really, really appreciate? If you could talk about the three areas of family meetings that are kind of the glue to keeping...
It's on page 167.
No, 197.
197.
Yeah. Okay. He's just finding a page here. Just so we want to be on the same page during our conversation.
Right.
We don't want to go astray now.
So basically, you know, the purpose of family meetings is to deal with the overlap between the family and the business system. And it helps create balance between those two systems, as I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And so the goal there is to have like a hybrid where you use the family meetings as a system to build the emotional equity of the family. So it's a vehicle to maintain family harmony and to manage and develop an understanding about what the family's expectations are for the performance of the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, so family meetings are an integral part. And the research on this is that when family businesses have family meetings, it's one of the things that helps them really be successful.
Yeah.
And there are three types of meetings you need to have in any kind of a business. They need to be like shareholder meetings and owner meetings, and which gets into governance and the board of directors. And only people who are members of those groups get to go to those meetings. The second type of meeting you need to have are employee meetings. People who work in the company get to go to those meetings. And then the third type of meeting are called family meetings. And the purpose of family meetings, as I said, is to deal with the boundary between your family in your business systems and that type of thing.
So to back that up to before you have the family or as part of the family meetings, you really need to sort out a common vision.
Yes.
So that everybody is moving in the same direction.
Correct.
I notice with entrepreneurs that they're either so loosely structured, kind of like parenting,
right,
where there isn't structure or they need to, rigid.
They need to focus, right?
Yeah.
When I was a young guy,
right,
when we first started doing this work, one of the guys that joined our firm was a guy named Stan Berenbaum. And Stan was a son-in-law in a family-owned business here in the Twin Cities called the Sussel Company. And the Sussel Company in the 50s did garages and breezeways and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Stan ran the company, but the family sold the business. And so he was looking for something to do, and he joined our firm to do some marketing. And he said to me one day, you know, he said, Tom, I want you to focus. You got to focus. And he said to me, you know, you can't ride two horses with one ass. Okay, Stan, I get it. I got it. I know what I'm supposed to do. I got it.
That image will be imprinted in my mind forever. Yeah. So have focus and a direction that you're going you can bring everybody forward with.
Yes. And that's where the soul of family business comes in, because the soul of family business is embodied in the common vision, because the common vision is created out of the family values, the family history, all of that. Everything that's a part of the family's history becomes a part of the common vision. And so the idea is to use that to inspire you to be what you want to be. And it's put in when you create it, it's like I asked them, what are the family values that you would like to see perpetuated in the company?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to create this kind of castle in the air and then do the backfilling afterwards to make sure that you get what you want.
Yeah.
And use it as an inspiration to help you develop what it is you want, not only in terms of the business, but also in terms of family relationships.
So you're saying that the soul of the business...
The soul of family business is embodied in the common vision.
Yes.
And so I ask them to recite it on a daily basis. So the idea is you create this vision, you don't put it in a drawer someplace, you use it as an inspiration on a daily basis. And along with that is a family prayer for loving kindness. It goes, may your family be filled with loving kindness. May your family be peaceful at ease. May your family be happy. Is another part of the common vision. And then in addition to that, each person has their own individual vision. And so like if you and I were in a family business, you'd have your individual vision on your sheet. I would have my individual vision on my sheet. But also on my sheet would be a system called kithing. And kithing is a Scottish word that means connecting at a spiritual level. So every day I would kithe to you that which you want, which I would take your individual vision and put it in the third person and say, may Nancy have A, B, and C, whatever she wants. And you'd know that on a daily basis, I was putting kithing, or another synonym for it is called psychic energy.
Yeah.
And there's a guy named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi who wrote a book called Flow. And he says basically there are three things that create flow in people's lives: work, active leisure time, and relationships. And when he was talking about relationships, he was talking about family relationships. And he says basically, families in today's environment cannot survive without the regular infusion of psychic energy. So he calls it psychic energy. So you can call it the old part of the boss, you can call it kithing, or you can call it psychic energy. But the bottom line is that you need to build the emotional equity of your family while you're building the equity of the company.
One element before we kind of close out our conversation too, that you bring into that same formula is honoring practices. Like you had an example of a Jewish family.
Oh, rituals.
The rituals and
rituals
the traditions.
Are the glue that holds a family together. So that one of the first things to go when business and financial differences are, you know, eroding family relationships are family rituals. And they forget about getting together on Sunday or whatever, like Friday night dinners, if it's a Shabbat type situation with a Jewish family, you know, they let those things go. And that's the worst thing that you should do.
Yeah. This generation and our younger youth have a different view about family traditions. They're
right.
A lot looser. They're not as rigid. And the structures are different in how people practice their faith.
So that's one of the things that is a topic for a family meeting is what are the family rituals? What do we need to do as a family to bring our rituals up to date with who we are as a family? Because we've changed, we've evolved, we have son-in-laws and daughter-in-laws in our family now. What do we need to do to make this a something
cohesive.
That's a win-win, a cohesive family for all of us?
Yeah.
And that's a topic for a family meeting.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
A treasured guest. And I'm just grateful that you took the time out of your schedule to really have a conversation with us so that we can share some of your gems with the rest of the world. And I encourage everybody to buy Tom's book, The Soul of Family Business, A Practical Guide to Family Business Success and a Loving Family. I also want to give a shout out to Sylvie, who is always listening to every episode. And thank you, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, brother from another mother. We'll see everybody next week. Thanks for tuning in. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. Totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our We Mentor Self-Leadership community. You can subscribe for free through wementor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in these all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at wementor.com or call me 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening and we'll see you next week.